Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of February 18th. I'm here this week with Father Peter Schneller, a new associate editor at America. Welcome, Father Schneller.
Thank you very much, Tim. Happy to be here and happy to be with America Magazine.
Father Schneller has written for the magazine over the years, but has just returned from over 20 years in Nigeria. Originally from New York, correct?
Correct, yes, Queens.
From Queens and went to Jesuit High School here in New York?
Yes, Regis High School. Regis 57. I just celebrated my 50th out of that school and 50th into the Jesuits.
I'm sure we have a few Regis grads among our listeners. So, and then you went on and joined the Jesuits after Regis. And then what did you do after that?
Well, the long course of studies.
Of course,
13 years. Was ordained in 1970. Went out to Chicago, where I completed doctoral studies in 1975.
All right, and you did in theology.
Systematic theology, and stayed out there in Hyde Park teaching at the Jesuit School of Theology, the Jesuit Seminary, which was going fine until we had to make the decision to have it closed in 1981. I just got tenure in January, and the school closed in June. I was very unhappy to see it end, but then I also had wanted to go to Africa to see a different Catholic church, a different church. So I was making some plans for that, and a telex came from Rome. In those days, we used telex from Father Arupe. Quote, Schneller needed in Africa, letter will follow. And the following week, a letter came explaining that there was a need in Nigeria, the bishops at their request, and I was able to pick up on that and take up on it. So I went in October of 1981 to be part of the Catholic Institute of West Africa.
This is a school?
It's a postgraduate, post-ordination, postgraduate school, at that time for priests. Now it's expanded, it's for lay people, sisters, and brothers too. And it's going strong. It's still in Port Harcourt, it had its 25th anniversary about a year ago. But I was part of the pioneer class and group of staff there.
Okay, and you were teaching there?
I was teaching, but also living in a parish where there's always more than enough parish work and children and daily masses and Sunday masses, two or three masses on a Sunday. So it was a lot of pastoral work in addition to the teaching, and also I was dean of the place. Another contribution, too, thanks to America, was probably 8 or 10,000 books that I sent over to the library. Most of them made it through the mails. And so it's really a fine theological library. It has to be kept up, but at least the foundations are there.
So what was it like making the change from teaching in Chicago to going to Nigeria? Must have been a bit of a culture shock for you.
Right. I like to compare it to coming back. Actually, going to Nigeria, in retrospect, was much easier than coming back 5 years later and re-enculturating into America. Why was it easy? The people are so warm, receptive, hospitable, and eager to learn about the Gospels and about Christ. So being a priest there was, well, relatively easy because the people were so eager to talk to you, listen to you, and celebrate with you, and sing with you, and dance with you. So it was a very warm welcome into their homes, but especially for my own interest, into their parishes. And of course, the teaching too was my own background, and so getting this institute off the ground and getting policies in place was, again, exciting and laying the foundations for something that's still there today.
So you were really part of the community when you lived there. I mean, it wasn't something where you just worked in the school and you didn't have much contact with folks around you.
Right. I made the decision to live at a parish with an Irish priest, and I probably learned more about the Irish church from going to Nigeria, living with this priest, but also the way the church was handling itself, conducting itself there. It was very much based upon the Irish missionary model. So I did a lot of work at the parish, teaching, and just meeting people, and then saying Mass at least once a day there. And that was very important, too, to get close to the people. It was near a railroad track, it was near a market, and driving around in my little Volkswagen back and forth to the from the school to the parish, and from the parish to the school pretty much every day of the week. And Sundays going out to a neighboring parish called Rainbow Town, which is not a very good name for the reality. But just, again, a growing church. That's one thing you notice there, that all the churches are filled and they're expanding and growing. and short of priests, actually. Even though there's a great vocation boom in Nigeria, they're still shorthanded. So a priest could be going to three masses on a Sunday and trying to cover the various outstations, as they call them, that they have. Very exciting, very uplifting.
Now, did you find it easier to connect with your parishioners in Africa than, say, the United States? I mean, it just seems, from what you're saying, that there was a closer relationship there.
Well, in one sense, yes. I mean, their eagerness to learn about Christ, to go to church and to hear long sermons and go to confession. So you had those immediate contacts, a lot of baptisms, a lot of children. On the other hand, the cultural differences always were there, and I would be speaking English, they'd be speaking one or two Nigerian languages, and I never became conversant in those languages because of the variety of languages, and also I was mainly teaching, and that was all in English. So in one sense, you were close to them. In another sense, there was always that cultural difference. And I mean, one thing to remember too is I went there with my American experience of church, which was very much post-Vatican II. And over there, it was an older, you might say, less Vatican II church, a bit conservative for my taste. And yet I had to stop, watch, and listen and watch how enthusiastic it was and respect that for the stage they're at, because their liturgies were basically filled, morning churches, not filled in the mornings, but every morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, a good group there, singing four hymns all the time. You always sing at Mass there. And then Sunday was filled. And the people hang around the church, too. It's like a social gathering, not just the Sunday Mass and go home in your cars. They would come by foot anyway. So just adjusting to the beautiful, warm, receptive, and celebratory church of Nigeria.
Now, you said earlier that you were there for, what was it, 10 years or so?
5 years at first.
5 years at first.
I went for 3 to 5 years, and after about 2 or 3 years, said, I want to stay longer. So I stayed for the five and then came back to
America. Then you came back and you wound up in Boston.
In Boston, Cambridge, yes, teaching at the Western, now it's called Western Jesuit School of Theology, living in a community with Jesuits and teaching there. Less pastoral work, although I did some. After a few months there, it hit me, culture shock. I began to miss Nigeria very much. I would sit in a chair, I remember very vividly, sitting in a chair on Friday nights after the week's classes and getting out my picture book of Nigeria and looking at the faces of the children especially and the people there. I just missed it so much. And it took about a year before I really more or less felt at home in America. Although, even now, 20 years later, I'd have to say I'm not at home either in America fully or in Nigeria. I think of myself as a bit of an in-between person, a back-and-forth person. And I like that.
Yeah.
It gives me a bit of freedom to appreciate both, but also to be critical of both. And certainly there are things to criticize on both sides of the Atlantic. And that's what came through, I think. Not just my own experience, but talking with other religious priests, sisters who had been overseas and had the same experience. We love America, and yet we can see problems here, difficulties, very different church than Africa or South America, and yet with a lot of virtues.
Sure, when you're living in a community where, for example, poverty is a real issue, and coming here and seeing, you know, generally how well people do that must be an issue of concern. Yeah?
Poverty, the health concerns, communications, just the availability of everything here. I mean, you heard the story, and it affected me a bit. You go into a supermarket here, and there are more cereals, choice of breakfast cereals, than a whole store would have for all the foods in Africa. Now, they're doing okay there. Africa and Nigeria, thank God, is not, you know, starvation, but other countries are. It's just a very different culture, different society. A few years ago, there was a survey that the Nigerians are, some people think, the most happy people in the world. And that's rang true to my own experience. In spite of all their problems, difficulties, corruption, poverty in certain areas, education poor, they were very happy, very joyful, very welcoming and warm people.
Now, when you were back in 1991 here, you wrote an article for America called Culture Shock on Returning to America, in which you list some of these issues that you face, including, you mentioned here, the shopping center, yes, and supermarkets, and the vast difference between those here and those in Africa. Also, you mentioned briefly children, and you had much more contact with children in Africa. Maybe you could talk about that.
Unavoidable. Anytime you're at a parish, the afternoons they come by for first of all to play a bit. Well, there just ain't parks over there, and so the churchyard became a park. for kicking a football around or makeshift football, other girls jumping rope and singing and dancing, playing games with one another. And then they'd be in for catechesis, say from 4 to 5:30 or something like that, led by lay people, young boys and girls who had studied a bit more, who would lead them in the catechism, basically the question and answer catechism. Many of them would stay for the mass, and then we started the children's mass at the parish. And the parents would start coming to that because the children would put on a drama or do the readings and the prayer of the faithful. It was very successful. Once a month we had that at the parish. But at Sunday mass, depends on the church, but in the smaller churches, the children would just be in the front on carpets or on the dirt floor, sitting with one another, almost on top of one another, maybe with a church warden, or we call them here ministers of hospitality, different name for the same reality, looking them over, making sure they keep in order. And they were remarkable in keeping order and listening and smiling. And I just kind of communicate with them by just visual. They're just beautiful children, two or three in the same family, taking care of one another.
Now, you compare that to, you know, living in Weston, where you were at the time, or even here at America House, where, you know, we don't have a lot of kids running around the hallways. I mean, it's a culture shock.
And yet, I was talking to my nieces a few weeks ago, and they're saying that the Upper East Side now has a boom in children.
Oh, interesting.
Which is good to see, baby carriages going around. But Cambridge was the opposite. It's Harvard University and our own school and other schools, and there were students, professors, and retired people, almost no children. And that just hit me once like a brick wall one day, walking up and down the streets, beautiful streets, famous streets.
And there weren't many children,
The other thing maybe to highlight is coming back to America, and even now, I think we've grown in this a bit, but America being very centered upon itself in terms of its issues, in terms of conversation. Now, you certainly can't avoid African issues and Iraq and so forth, but I think America overall is very much too much turned in on itself and its own issues, economic issues, which are important, family issues, all the problems of crime and whatever else. But I just felt that the horizon of many Americans was really limited. And I think part of my work was to try to expand that by writing and talking to people and preaching about it too. In fact, in the next few months, I hope to be doing some preaching on Africa, mission appeals through the propagation of the faith, which I look forward to doing. It's a way for me to keep my sense of Africa alive, but also to share the good things happening there. I mean, I can also talk about the tragedies, but basically there's so much good happening there. Things that the American people and American church can learn from.
Now, we don't want to dwell on tragedy, but there was a tragic moment that you went through when you were in Nigeria. When you returned, you became the president of Loyola Jesuit College, which was founded about 10 years ago.
Yes, 11 years now.
11 years ago.
I was part of the foundation of it when I was the superior of the mission. Thanks to the New York Province Jesuits and other benefactors, we got this incredible school, simply now the finest college, high school in American terms, junior high and high, in all of Nigeria, Loyola Jesuit College in Abuja. And it's been a very successful total boarding school, only boarding school for boys and girls. And in 2005, December 10th, students going home for Christmas holidays boarded a plane in Abuja, and the plane did not make it to Port Harcourt. It crashed at the airport, and 60 of our students, 10% of our population, died. One from each class. Five parents are losing two kids, and one parent losing three kids. And yet it's leading to, I don't want to jump too fast because it simply was a terrible tragedy. And yet the faith of the people, the love of the people came through very strongly, Christian faith, and we got through the tragedy, plus the resilience of our own students who were between 11 and 18, 17 years of age. And coming from that now will be another Jesuit college, Jesuit Memorial College, and other tremendous deeds of charity and solidarity by the very parents who lost their own children.
So Jesuit Memorial College is, this is another school that's been founded in Nigeria?
It's being founded. Yeah. We had a very generous grant from the governor of River State and land, and we're raising the rest of the funds now. We have an architect working on plans. We have the land, but it's not fully secured yet. but we're going through the process of getting it secured and getting funds. So within maybe 2 or 3 years, another school would open up, which would be like the one we have in Abuja, but a bit more local, trying to cater to the needs of the local people, and probably would include a primary school so that a village right near this new college would be able to train students from there and then accept them into our own college when they have done well in the primary school.
Okay. Mm. Well, I do want to mention that the name of that article that you wrote about this incident in 2006 was called From Grief to Hope. I will put this article along with the one you wrote in 1991 about culture shock up on the web so people who listen to this can read it.
Yes.
So how has it been? I mean, why did you decide to come back? Why, after all the years in Nigeria, did you come back to America, come back to the magazine as well?
Well, things are changing in Africa for the good. There's a whole number of young Jesuits in Africa, throughout Africa, and therefore in Nigeria and Ghana, who are simply qualified now and taking over the works, taking over the administration. And there's an old proverb, to be, beget, be gone, for the missionaries. To be with the people, to beget apostolates, as we've done. This college is a perfect example of it, or retreat house, novitiate, formation communities, and then be gone, which means you've done your work, hand it over, and go back home. And some say that that third stage can be the toughest.
Yeah.
It's been tough, but I must say, I'm here at America Magazine back in New York City, and very happy to be here, because this is a tremendous apostolate. And it kind of flows from what I've been doing in Africa. A lot of writing, a lot of reflection on the church in Africa. So I hope to keep up those interests here. It's kind of correspondence with Africa, stories about Africa, but also theological reflection on issues of Africa and America. So I think it's a good mix in them. It's great to be here.
Well, our readers can look forward to that in the coming months, some contributions from you about Africa and about the transition here. So Father Peter Schneller, thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully you can come back again soon.
Thank you, Tim.
I want to thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the America Magazine podcast. Look on the web this week. We have a couple special features. Matt Malone, Jesuit Scholastic here, does a roundup of the presidential primaries. We also have an archive article from Thomas Shannon on the legacy of the Schiavo case. You can subscribe to our podcast by going to our page at americamagazine.podbean.com. We'd like to thank again Bill McGarvey, who's provided the music for this week's show. You can learn more about him at billmcgarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.